This week on Eco Report.
By the mid-2020s, they could phase that plant out in their own numbers, so it wouldn't cost them any more than to continue to pour money into an outdated power source.
Jody Paris from Beyond Coal discusses the future of Indiana's coal-burning power plants.
Eco Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
Eco Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Good morning, and welcome to Eco Report. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Phil Casper, bringing you an environmental watchdog reporting from South Central Indiana.
The first black bear seen in Indiana in nearly 150 years was captured and euthanized in April. The Times of Northwest Indiana reported the bear was killed after attempting to break into two homes in Harbor County, Michigan. The story did not explain why the bear wasn't captured and transported to a remote area in northern Michigan. The 2 to 3 year old male bear had been spotted numerous times in northern Indiana and southwestern Michigan over the past year. When the bear crossed into Indiana in early June of 2015, it became the state's first confirmed wild black bear sighting in 144 years. Hunting and habitat loss had eradicated the species in the 1800s.
An IU professor presented findings last week about why local residents did or did not support a plan to kill deer in the Griffey Woods in 2015. The question of whether to perform a deer cull in the area produced one of the most heated debates in city government in recent years. Visiting professor Eric Nachmas from the School of Public Health said residents' opinions were tied to deeply set values. Nachmas presented his findings at a meeting of the Bloomington Board of Parks Commissioners.
So the main thing that we found is that you have people supporting the policy that understand the ecosystem in general, that believe that when deer are overpopulated, they can negatively impact that ecosystem. So the logical conclusion would be, well, you just need to give information to people, and that will resolve the issue. I'm sure I don't need to tell you all that that is not always the case.
NACMA said the debate was affected by a lack of trust in government. He made some recommendations for what the board might do moving forward.
An approach to public outreach, interpretation, and environmental education that some of our colleagues at IU have been proponents of, that they call a two-way dialogic approach. So in a perfect world, you have an unlimited amount of staff and resources, trained volunteers that could be out, be out at Griffey Lake, roving the trails, leading guided tours, where they could ask people what they thought, listen to people's questions, and then have this experiential component where they can demonstrate the impact that deer have had at Griffey Lake. Just visiting Griffey Lake, it's not obvious to most people that there is a problem in terms of an impact on the ecosystem.
The city council approved a deer cull in 2014, and the city hired a company, White Buffalo, to kill deer in Griffey Woods. But the contractor ultimately canceled, saying that conditions were not right to carry out a cull.
The 107-hour period from May 7th to the 11th was a landmark in Portugal. During that time, solar, wind, and hydroelectricity powered that country completely. By 11 a.m. on May 8th, Germany was producing so much renewable energy that it was selling energy back to the people. In the U.S., three cities, Aspen, Burlington, and Greensburg, are powered totally by 100% renewable energy every day. Further, 12 other cities in the U.S., including San Diego, the country's eighth largest, have committed to transitioning to 100% renewable energy over the next couple of decades or sooner. Some Nebraska farmers have installed a large solar array on their farm, purchased an electric-powered vehicle, and shared their message of 100% clean energy with a huge crop art display. Recently, activists in Florida joined hands across the sand to send a message that they're ready for 100% clean power.
Glyphosate, the world's most heavily used herbicide, has been found in most of the urine samples from Americans in a testing project that started last year. Deemed a probable human carcinogen by the World Health Organization's Cancer Agency, glyphosate is marketed in part as Monsanto's Roundup. A laboratory at the University of California, San Francisco, did the study, which showed that 93% of urine samples tested positive for glyphosate residues. The researchers found no glyphosate in tap water samples. These results are from only a small percentage of the total samples collected. More data will be released later this year. People living in the West and Midwest tested higher than those living in other areas of the country. Glyphosate has never been studied by regulators or the chemical industry at levels the U.S. human population is being exposed to. Evidence suggests that low levels of the herbicide might disrupt hormones even more than mid and high levels.
In the MIT Technology Review, the status of transmission of wind-generated electricity was summarized. They said the wind power industry had another banner year in 2015, and the outlook for the future is strong. The U.S. Department of Energy's National Wind Power Plan calls for wind to supply 20% of the country's electricity by 2030, up from less than 5% today. There's one major obstacle in the industry's path, though. Much of that electricity is generated in remote, windswept areas of the Great Plains. A transmission system to send it to market doesn't exist. Getting power from wind farms in Wyoming, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Iowa to the populous cities to the east and west has proven far more difficult than wind developers envisioned a few years ago. CleanLine is one of several companies trying to build massive, high-voltage, direct-current, long-distance transmission lines. Several of these big overland projects have been blocked in recent months by state legislators and public utilities commissions. Clean Line's Grain Belt Express project, designed to bring wind power from Kansas to Illinois and Indiana, was blocked by Missouri's Public Service Commission, which voted earlier this year to deny Clean Line eminent domain authority to cross the state. Their argument is based ostensibly on objections from landowners along the proposed route. The three other states, including Indiana, have already approved the project. In Indiana, the power would plug into the grid at Sullivan. Even with the cost of transmission, Plains wind power is often cheaper on a per kilowatt hour basis than electricity from aging coal plants. Relief, however, may be on the way in the form of a little-known provision of the 2005 Energy Policy Act. In late March, the Department of Energy said that if necessary, it would use its eminent domain authority under the 2005 legislation to acquire rights of way for the Plains and Eastern Project. This is different from the Grain Belt Express route. It will connect wind farms in the Oklahoma Panhandle with the Tennessee Valley Authority's grid by Arkansas. The Plains and Eastern Project will be the largest transmission line in the U.S. ever in terms of cost and voltage. Construction is expected to begin in 2017, and the first power will be transmitted in 2020, the company says.
Environmental injustice is the disproportionate siting of polluting facilities in poor communities. Recently, the United Nations Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent issued a report expressing deep concern about the environmental injustice that African Americans experience. The UN experts noted that African Americans are disproportionately exposed to environmental hazards affecting their health and standard of living. According to a new report from the Center for Effective Government, people of color compose nearly half the 11 million people living in areas adjacent to dangerous facilities. Another report found that race was the most significant predictor of someone's living near hazardous waste sites. A recent report from the NAACP found that 78% of all African Americans live within 30 miles of a coal-fired power plant. Such plants are linked to serious health problems such as heart and respiratory disease and lung cancer.
The organization Strolling of the Heifers has released its 2016 Locavore Index, which ranks the 50 states, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia according to how committed they are to locally sourced food. Vermont is number one. The next four are Maine, Oregon, Montana, and New Hampshire in that order. Rounding out the top 10 are Hawaii, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, Rhode Island, and Washington, D.C. Indiana's rank is number 30. The index is based on data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and also incorporates information on the number of farmers' markets, community-supported agriculture programs, and food hubs, all compared on a per capita basis. The index also takes into consideration each state's school districts with farm-to-school programs and the percentage of the budgets of those programs spent on local food. Indiana has a 179 farmer market. Indiana has a 179 farmers markets, 143 community-supported agriculture programs, and 31% participation in farm-to-school programs.
River otters thrived in Indiana until habitat destruction, pollution, and unregulated trapping dramatically affected the population. According to the Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Service, breeding populations disappeared throughout the state by 1942. Between 1995 and 1999, more than 300 river otters from Louisiana were transplanted into the Muscatatuck, Patoka, Ohio, St. Joseph, Tippecanoe, and Upper Wabash rivers. 10 years later, river otters were sighted in 71 of 92 Indiana counties. The success of the reintroduction efforts resulted in the river otter's removal from Indiana's endangered species list in 2005. Now there is trapping. The season was scheduled to run from November 15th to March 15th, or until the quota of 600 river otter had been reached. The quota was reached before March 15th, so the season was closed. Indiana's otter trapping season was opposed by the Humane Society on the basis that trapping is a cruel practice that subjects animals to pain.
El Nino was seen as an opportunity for California to receive enough rainfall to reverse the drought situation. The northern part of the state received good rains, and the snowpack in some mountain ranges is better than it has been in years. But the bottom line is California has not received nearly enough rain to break the drought. At the start of 2016, 69% of the state was classified as extreme drought. As of March 22nd, the extreme drought classification applied to 56% of the state. In Northern California, some reservoirs have filled. In Lake Oroville, one of the larger lakes in California, the water level rose by 216 feet, basically from almost dry to full. However, Southern California received very little rain and remains in extreme drought. The state would need 13 trillion gallons of water to eliminate the drought. The El Nino was one of the strongest on record. Now it is weakening quickly and may shift to its opposite, La Nina, by this fall, according to a recent government outlook. After tying the record for the strongest El Nino, as defined by a three-month running mean season surface temperature anomaly in the so-called Nino region of the central and eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean, sea surface temperatures are steadily cooling. The El Nino caused very high wind shear in the Caribbean during the summer of 2015. This high shear tore apart tropical storms. For the summer of 2016, high shear winds are not anticipated. Thus, there could be more hurricanes. Hurricane frequency, however, depends on a bunch of factors, so there is no certainty the U.S. could have several landfalls during 2016. That's the news for this week. For Eco Report, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Phil Casper. EcoReport is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Thank you.
Today's Eco Report feature, Nome Holi, is interviewing Jody Peras of the Beyond Coal Project by the Sierra Club. Beyond Coal is an interest group that advocates for the right to clean air.
I'd like to just start off by having you comment on how smooth has been the transition of the Indianapolis Power and Light's Harding Street plant now that they stopped using coal earlier this year.
February 25th, Indianapolis Power and Light stopped burning coal at its Harding Street plant, and the lights are still on here. It's been terrific. And anecdotally, we're seeing a lot more good air days in Indianapolis than we did a year ago. I looked at the March numbers, and in March 2015, we had about 16 moderate air days and about 15 good air days. And in March 2016, we had two moderate air days and 29 good air days.
Now, what makes for a good air day?
Good and moderate and, you know, bad air days are measured by U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. They use a couple of prime measures, which is small particles in the air and ozone. But we're seeing a real reduction in the small particles that air monitors in Indianapolis are now picking up. You know, we're just real pleased that it looks like Indianapolis's air has improved just, you know, incredibly since we stopped burning coal here. And
there was a recent report out of MIT that said that small particle pollution is also dangerous, and because the small particles can actually go through the lungs into the bloodstream.
You know, when you look at the kind of air pollution that there used to be in cities like London, when they called it a London fog, but people were dying because they were, you know, there was the heavy air pollution, kind of what we're seeing in China today, where they're, you know, heavily burning coal and not seeing that kind of air pollution there as well.
Yes.
So, definitely linked. All of these air pollutants are directly linked to our health, and that's why we work to try to clean up the air as much as possible.
Now, I know you've also been pretty active in the Rockport facility, so tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, Rockport is a power plant in Spencer County. It's the number 6 carbon polluter in the nation in terms of the amount of carbon dioxide that it put out in 2014. It's the second most toxic power plant in Indiana when you look at the EPA's toxic release inventory. It's a plant that's owned by Indiana Michigan Power, which serves people on the opposite end of the state. So Spencer County is down, you know, about 60 miles east of Evansville along the Ohio River. The customers are in South Bend and Elkhart and Fort Wayne and Muncie. We've been looking at that plant in particular because it's one of the few plants east of the Mississippi that doesn't have scrubbers on it to remove sulfur dioxide. The utility Indiana Michigan Power did an analysis last year in which they showed that they could spend, instead of continuing to put money into that plant, buying coal that's actually from Wyoming and Kentucky, it's out of state coal, instead of putting money into that plant, they could invest in solar and wind power and energy efficiency. They could build a much cleaner energy of the 21st century at the same cost or even less cost. By the mid-2020s, they could phase that plant out, and their own numbers show it wouldn't cost them any more than to continue to pour money into an outdated, you know, power source.
So have they made a decision about putting on additional scrubbing stuff, or are they waiting until the lawsuit is settled, or?
Yeah, they're under a consent decree with EPA, and we're a party to that consent decree, that they have to put scrubbers on in 2025 on one of the two units there and 2028 on the other unit. At that point, they can either put a scrubber on, they can retire the plant. So they're going to have to make those choices pretty soon. In the next few weeks, we expect them to file with the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission to put some lesser pollution controls on that are required by 2019. So that's an opportunity, I think, where we're going to be asking them, what is your long-term plan for this power plant? In fact, there will be a public comment period and a public hearing, and we'll be working on with the communities up there to help encourage them to tell I&M that they want that shift to clean energy to start happening as soon as possible.
Is natural gas not a candidate for Rockport?
I don't know if they've looked at that or not. Like, it's an option that they could look at. And of course, you know, we're concerned about natural gas too, because from the point when it's pulled out of the ground through fracking, there are a lot of environmental and health impacts there.
Yes.
There's a lot of methane that's released that is very dangerous to our climate. So, we think it would be a huge mistake if we tried to shift from all coal to all natural gas. So, one reason why we supported it in Indianapolis was that there was, retrofitting a coal plant is a short-term thing that you can use to make sure you keep the lights on, but you're not investing in something that's going to have to be there for 50 or 60 years, which is what usually we expect with a new power plant.
Do you have any indication that Missouri is going to remove its opposition to the so-called Grain Belt Express, which would bring wind-generated power all the way from western Kansas across Missouri, Illinois, and into Indiana, where it would plug into the grid at Sullivan? Kansas has approved, Illinois has approved, Indiana has approved, but Missouri says, well, we don't want any transmission lines crossing our land.
Yeah, there are a number of lines like that, and I don't know specifically the status in Missouri. I know that's something that we've been working to support. But in addition to Grain Belt, there's another one called Clean Line that's bringing, wind from the west into the electric grid in the east. There's a lot of wind resources out west, and there are a lot of folks working to try to transfer that wind power out here to the east where there's more energy demand. We also have a lot of wind resources here in Indiana. We have, four times the wind resources we would need to meet all our energy needs, so we could be an exporter of wind, and in fact, a lot of, two-thirds of the wind energy we do generate here is exported and not kept here in Indiana, unfortunately. But our own utilities could be definitely using more Indiana wind, and we need to work on getting some of that wind from the west, to be transported over here into the east where there's a need for it.
I'd like to thank you for the update. I've been speaking with Jody Paris, the Beyond Coal representative for the Sierra Club in Indiana. Thank you very much, Jody.
Thanks, Norm. My pleasure.
It's 11:53 a.m. and you're listening to EcoReport on WFHB, bringing you environmental watchdog reporting from South Central Indiana.
Would you like to join the Eco Report crew? WFHB is looking for volunteer reporters and engineers to join our award-winning news department. We provide training and will work with all schedules. Just bring your love for the environment. For more information, email volunteer at wfhb.org or call 812-323-1200. It's time now for In Nature, a segment focusing on the flora and fauna of South Central Indiana.
This is In Nature.
Indiana summer nights are full of insects seen, and many of them are looking for a mate. But there's one bug with a visual nighttime mating dance, the firefly or lightning bug. Worldwide, there are about 2,000 known species of lightning bugs, and here in Indiana, there are around 30. Adult fireflies are soft-bodied beetles that produce light in special cells located near the end of their abdomen. Their light, which can be yellow, green, or pale red, is produced through a complex chemical reaction. Most of the fireflies that we see flashing at night are males trying to impress females who are sitting on low vegetation. The males produce a flashing pattern that consists of short and long bursts in patterns similar to Morse code. If a female is receptive, she will answer with a flash of her own. Each species of firefly has its own unique flash pattern. After mating, female fireflies will lay up to 200 eggs in moist soil. The larvae are dull-colored creatures that feed on soft-bodied insects, slugs, and snails. By late summer, immature fireflies can produce light, but they don't flash. They leave their light on, and so are often referred to as glowworms, although they aren't the only organism given that name. These glowworms are most frequently seen near ponds and streams. Some firefly larvae overwinter underground, while others spend the colder months on or under the bark of trees. When they emerge, the firefly larvae spend several weeks feeding, and then between 1 to 2.5 weeks pupating. After that, they are ready to look for mates of their own and light up the night.
You've been listening to In Nature, a production of WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Now, a few local events of interest with our weekly event calendar. Sycamore Land Trust is hosting a Lil Hikers Sensory Adventure at the Cedars Preserve in Monroe County on Saturday, June 4th from 9 a.m. to noon. The hike is designed to help you test your ability to identify mystery items with your eyes closed. You can observe the wonders of nature using your five senses with Environmental Education Director Shane Gibson at the Cedars Preserve. Meet at the northeast end of the Sam's Club parking lot in Bloomington at 9 a.m. to caravan to the hard-to-find Quiet Haven. The outing is appropriate for children up to age 12. A snack will be provided. RSVP by June 2nd by calling 812-336-5382, extension 100.
The Sassafras Audubon Society is hosting a bird walk on Sunday, June 5th. Susan and Jim Hingefeld will lead a field trip to look for breeding passerines with a focus on warblers. Meet at the Eastside Kmart parking lot in Bloomington at 7 a.m. with a return at noon.
Come to a hearing on coal ash on Thursday, June 16th from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Indiana Government Center in Indianapolis. Coal ash is a huge problem in Indiana, threatening the quality of our drinking water. IDEM is conducting a public hearing to receive comments on Indiana's draft Coal Combusting Residuals Part 256.
Participate in the American Hiking Society's 23rd anniversary of National Trails Day on Saturday, June 4th from 9 a.m. to noon at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve. Hiking trails allow us to keep in touch with the natural world while exercising and relieving stress. Volunteers are needed to help maintain Griffey Lake Preserve. Contact Nikki Wooten at 812-349-3739 for more information.
That wraps up our show for this week. EcoReport is brought to you in part by Solar Systems of Indiana, designing and installing renewable energy systems. SSI is a member of the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners and works to foster the acceptance of solar energy across the Midwest through education and consultation. More information by phone at 812-336-2785 or online at solarsystemsofindiana.com.
This week's news stories were written by Joe Crawford, Norm Holy, and Linda Green. Our event calendar was compiled by myself, Juliana Daly. Our broadcast engineer is Matt Griffin. Eco Report is produced by Juliana Daly and Felice Chichek. Our executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Phil Casper. Join us next week on Eco Report when Norm Holy interviews Marsha Veldman of the local farmers market. Until then, EcoReport is encouraging you to take collective action to defend the Earth.
You've been listening to the EcoReport,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
EcoReport is your independent, ecologically inspired news source.
For South Central Indiana.
Bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the EcoReport staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org. Thank you.